The Iowa State Fair is providing the backdrop for many commodity updates. As we tour around the grounds, and let's check in with several of the groups. We'll talk with pork, with turkey, with dairy, and a couple of other surprises. But we are going to go to a panel from the Start Smart, a Tools for Beginning Farmers. This was held on August 15th, 2019, inside the Penningroth Media Center at the Iowa State Fair Cattle Barn. It was sponsored by AccuSteel, which is a funder of the Market to Market TV show, the Coalition to Support Iowa's Farmers, and Market to Market. So we will be talking about setting up your farm business, farmer loan programs for beginning producers, financial and business plan development. But first, we're going to start on the M2M podcast, which, by the way, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is a production of Iowa Public Television and the Market to Market TV show. We're going to start where Delaney Howell is at Center Court, and she is moderating a panel with Sue Martin and Naomi Bloom, two of our regular market analysts. They're going to be talking about trade. They're going to be talking about the markets that happened this week of August 15th, 2019. So remember, there was a government report that came out earlier in the week. These are the conversations that came after that as we give advice to starting farmers and those who are looking for just a little fine-tuning of their education. So now, roundtable discussion inside the cattle ring at the Penningroth Media Center at the Iowa State Fair. Here's Delaney.
So, Naomi, Sue, we had quite the report this week on Monday. I will just open it up for you guys to share your initial thoughts and reactions to that report.
Well, I think the big surprise, of course, was corn acres. And yet, in a way, it really wasn't, because we were hearing consistently June, well into July, that farmers had been planting bean acres into corn in Iowa, Minnesota, and in South Dakota. So in a way, it wasn't a surprise, but yet to have 11.2 million prevent plant acres in corn and then end up with acres only down very little from a year ago, 1.7 million acres, and down a little over 3 million acres from where we were in March, that was the surprise. We expected the yield to go up, mainly because WASDE surprised us with a 10 bushel to the acre reduction in June. Was a little aggressive. There's been one other time where they did about a 9 bushel reduction in June, only to turn around in July and August and add yield back. So this report was as of August 1st, and your crop started pollinating about mid-July to the latter part of July into mid-August. So you have about 90% of the crop now pollinated, tasseled and pollinated. So as of August 1st, the July weather was not as oppressively hot as what it could have been. So that would then maybe give a little optimism to the yield. So in a way, not a surprise, but a disappointment to see the prices fall as hard as they did, probably extracting a little bit of weather premium back out of the market and funds being long.
Yeah, adding on to what Sue said, the surprise from my perspective was the yield. I think I was expecting them to not do too much changes. And then over the weekend, there was a podcast that came out, and Lance from the USDA was interviewed. And on it, he said that they were going to do a new way to figure out yield on this August report. So there were no people that went out into a field. No one went into the field to see what was out there. And how they came up with that yield number was they used four different things. They surveyed the farmer and they asked, what do you think your yield is going to be this year? And then they pulled satellite imagery. And then they used August crop conditions as of August 1st. And then finally, they assumed and are assuming normal yield and normal weather conditions, that's the emphasis, from here on out. And with as late as this crop got planted, with 40 million acres of corn planted in June, the yield number is something that really is subject to change going forward, and every weather forecast, I think, is very important, because if that yield number ends up going back down, like most of the satellite imagery companies are actually suggesting, the biggest thing is that the carryout number, the ending stocks, what's left over at the end of the year, Right now, they put that at 2.1 billion bushels, which is about 375 corn futures, right where we are right now. But if that ending stocks number gets smaller, that's how prices go higher. So if we can see the yield number come down, then that'll help make the ending stocks number come lower as well, which ultimately pushes prices higher going forward. And remember, 93 and 95, similar price action. We had slow starts to spring, not the best summer for weather conditions. Prices peaked in July or early August. Everything fell apart, but then the post-harvest rally in those years took out the summer highs and then kept going higher into the following year. So there, I don't think this is over and done yet. And if I was an end user or if I was a country who was needing to buy some corn, by golly, here's your chance. Get it done. It's on sale.
I hate to sound too much like Dara Newsome, but, you know, I mean, he's a strong... whatever the opposite of an advocate is for the USDA reports. He says these reports don't matter, they're inaccurate, but the market reacts to them. In your opinions, should we be placing so much value on these USDA reports? I mean, it sounds like this year they even changed the way that they were surveying things. Does that make it accurate?
I think we have to take it, it's like listening to mom and dad. You might think they're wrong, but you have to listen to them. And I think that when we look at these USDA reports, there's a lot of younger generation that's in there, and they've lost the old scholar, and sometimes as we get older, we think we don't like change maybe so well. But I do think that there was something to be said, that we did have more corn acres out there. Now, the key will be going forward. And as Naomi mentioned, the acres or the yields, that's one of our moving parts as we go forward, is what yield does between now and January. FSA has also said they will be talking about acres in September, October, and November. Well, seriously, FSA has known all along what we have for acres. But in the meantime, the other moving part that we have is going to be our yields and what the weather does. And this year has the four main components that help enhance the ability or the possibility of an early frost freeze. And when you look at some recent data that came out of NOAA, it would almost imply the best chance for a frost freeze for the first one will be between September 12th and September 22nd. And that's just going to be way too early for this crop. Illinois, way behind. And that's the eastern corn belt. That is how we got to 473 on December corn, was on the fact of the question mark of late acres, late planting. It wasn't so much on yield, it was the planting. So now that we know what the acres were, we had to reset back, and now we'll start working our way back again. So I think yields will probably come down. I think harvested acres might come down in the end.
You're totally right. And one other thing, that building on what Sue just said about Illinois being planted so late, they're not used to harvesting late down there. And my understanding, based on some of the branch offices that Stuart Peterson has in central Illinois, those guys don't have dryers down there. Like, we have dryers here to dry that corn. They're not used to working past Halloween. They're going to be into a new surprise for getting this crop dried down in time. The other part to it, which I'm interested to watch, basis levels in southern Illinois along the rivers. The end users down there and some of our export markets are used to getting their corn in October at a cheap price. It's not going to be ready. It's not going to be ready. And so we're going to see a lot of cash market excitement start to come into play. And I really don't think this is over. So a lot of questions had come to me from producers who maybe have contracts, basis contracts for old crop that need to be priced by the end of this month, right? Because it would be based off September futures. Okay, so the next 2 weeks before those September contracts start to go into their expiration period, that's going to be a lot of pricing volatility, I think, for the futures market. There's going to be some opportunities there for end users to scoop up what they need to lock in their supplies. And I think once we get past first notice day on the September contract and getting into the delivery, that's a lot of times seasonally too when the marketplace will start to pick up. We just got to get past first notice day and into the actual expiration of the September corn contract.
And I think with soybeans, we've seen this market, actually the bean market was the one that got the most favorable news. Yield didn't change, and it shouldn't have because they didn't have a clue. August is bean month. So they didn't have a clue as of August 1st what that yield's going to be. But if you look at our nights, these nighttime temperatures are so cool. We were 56 degrees this morning when I was driving down here at 6 o'clock. And it's, you know, every morning this week, I think the best has been in the mid to low 60s. And so we've had this for several weeks. Beans just tend to go still. They don't add pods or blooms. They just go dormant, and they don't do anything. And beans mature by daylight hours. You get past Labor Day, I know my days seem to look like they're getting shorter already, and you get past Labor Day, and it's going to be even tougher. Corn, on the other hand, can sit there. It slows up the maturity and getting them going, but it also does add a little weight into the kernel and what have you. So it's viewed that if an early frost freeze came, the bean crop's the one that's going to get absolutely annihilated, and then the corn, you'll have something. We just don't know what. So when you look at this year's crop and the old crop in July and the basis levels that took off and ran, in July 10th, I was in South Dakota for the Governor's Ag Summit, and farmers there were telling me that for the first time, they couldn't even remember a time in history that they had had an inverted basis on their cash market, but they finally had an inverted basis. I think when we get into next year, I'm a proponent of holding the old crop corn, or not the old crop, but what would be harvested here this year. If you can, I'm a proponent of holding it. I am hearing of elevators in some areas, like you mentioned, in Illinois into Indiana, that are offering free drying. You bring it in, or not free drying, you pay the drying, but you have free storage. Well, there's a little gimmick there. Why do they give you free storage? Because it isn't going to stay in the elevator. It's going to go out into shipment. And so that's why they say free storage. But it is another avenue for farmers, especially in those areas. And what if they get hit with an early frost freeze? It's going to be tough.
And that's a huge point. So the USDA didn't touch the soybean yield on this last report. But if we see yield, right now they have it at 48.5 bushel to the acre. And if it goes down to like 45 and a half, which is still, quite frankly, a decent yield overall for our country, that is going to make our ending stock situation be cut in half from what it was a year ago. And the ending stocks on soybeans then go back below 500 million bushels. That, friends, is how you get beans priced over $10, back into 11, possibly 12. Of course, we still have to deal with China and our export market. But again, the weather going forward is just so critical. And as I was driving here, where I live in Wisconsin, I'm from Fond du Lac. So I took 151 Kitty Corner all the way across the state of Wisconsin and then came across I-80 to get here. And so of the years that I've been doing that drive, this is the, even the places where the grain and the corn look good, it just didn't look as good as it had in years past. And in Wisconsin, you can still see the dirt between the soybean rows. We have corn that just did pollination last week. Our saving grace is that that can be used for silage for our dairies. But those beans, they look pathetic. And I was in Southern Illinois last year where they had soybeans, I swear to you, as tall as my hip. And the whole plant was just peppered with pods. And it was the most beautiful, lush looking crop I had ever seen in my life. And now these beans are knee-high at best, and just behind, so behind. So we got to watch it going forward.
I think so. And I think when you look crop to crop, because of this report being so friendly towards soybeans, and because of the lateness and the fear, I think that if farmers are able to get a bean crop in, I have a feeling because of the MF2, and now already talking about an MF3 for next year, possibility. I think farmers might elect to hold those beans longer and not be so willing to let them go. The one thing I will say is that on this corn, if a farmer has it, is able to have it in his bins, I still think we're going to see an inverted basis again next July, maybe May, June, July. And I think it's, and that's, and I've had to question because of the extra acres that we have, but I still think they might do that because I'm not sure that this last year's crop was really as big as they said. And I think that they certainly were trying to throw it out there to entice the farmer to let go of it. So yes, there's corn in the farmer's hands, but is it really as much as what's thought? We're going to find out here between now and the 1st of September, and the break in prices might slow that too.
Yeah. I just one more thing to add to Sue's comment. So if you are going to store your grain, if I could offer some new advice to younger producers, Google seasonal price patterns for corn futures and soybean futures. Chances are it'll take you to a company called Moore Research, M-O-O-R-E. And what's really important about that is that when you see the seasonal price patterns for December corn futures, lo and behold, they happen almost every single year. And then even if you're thinking about old crop, you're going to want to print off March futures and July futures, because when you have a visual that you could print off or just tape into your truck or tape it into your office, it helps you have the confidence to remember when usually seasonally prices of grain are highest during which months and when they're cheapest during which months. So that way in the winter months, it gives you some confidence to make the cash sales on grain that you have in the bin. Or in early summer, holding it to July with the potential of strong markets again, which I agree with Sue, then it gives you the confidence to, yeah, I need to be letting some go. Or if you're comfortable with forward contracting, it gives you the confidence to forward contract in the summer months. Now this year, I don't think as many people did forward contracting like they normally would, and I don't think it was out of greed by any means. We still have producers who don't know what their fields are going to yield. And so I would be nervous too to forward contract when I'm thinking, is this crop even going to be ready by Thanksgiving or not? But in a normal year, those seasonal charts are really helpful to just give you extra confidence to be making those sales.
I want to put just a quick pause on this, and from the audience, just so we know what topics we need to make sure we hit today, how many folks in the room are grain producers? Do we have any livestock cattle producers in the room as well? And hog producers? Okay, we'll make sure and touch on cattle for sure then as well. With the seasonal price tendencies, Naomi, I'm going to open it up to you first since you just opened the can there. What do you consider a normal year? I mean, this year, by all stretch, seems unnormal, but how do you quantify what years are normal to follow those usual price tendencies?
Yeah, I would say weather-wise, definitely not a normal year. But normally there's little hiccups with planting every year or some sort of a summer weather scare as far as heat goes. But the seasonal tendency for new crop corn futures is that prices bottom in mid-September to late September, and then start to work higher once harvest is done. We have a higher price higher into early January and into the early winter months when we're trying to figure out what demand is going to be for the upcoming year, when we see how much crop South America has planted and how their crop conditions are going. So a lot of times that is your best pricing opportunity during the winter. Because then once we get into March and we say, okay, we think we know what the planted acres are going to be, it takes some of the mystery and the allure out of pricing opportunities. And then prices fall lower until we get our summer rally. So a lot of times January is a good time to be making pricing opportunities. Sometimes you get another hurrah in March. And then you got to wait almost until June or July. So be mindful of that. Those seasonals work.
One thing I will say is for a producer that is holding corn in their bins into next year, and the reason I was saying hold the corn is because of the inverted basis. The only way you're going to get that is if you've got the corn. You can sell corn and buy the futures, but you aren't going to get that basis move. If for the producer that does do that, I would really recommend on rallies having some puts underneath that crop. So that way you've got it floored and protected. And even then, if the price doesn't rally much, but you have the inverted basis level, you're still going to get that. As far as right now, on this break, it's fallen so hard, you've had 47 cents down this week. We're telling producers and end users especially, buy some calls. They're cheap. And don't go super far out of the money, but buy some calls. They are very reasonable right now because all of a sudden everybody's optimistic thought process has been kind of like a balloon, you know, pricked a little bit. So I think that when we look at the market, yes, I think we have better to go. Do I think we're done on the downside? We hit a trend line this week, yesterday. We hit a trend line down against 370 and a half, and that's going back from the 363 and a half contract low on the December corn, which is the lowest it's been since it came on the board, and then extending backwards through the low of 342 and a half last year. Keep in mind that 363 and a half low came in mid-May on the thought that you're going to have a big crop and what have you. Now they've and then we rallied up to $4.73, $1.10 on the thought of how many acres were we actually going to get in, and that's all been taken away now. So now it's all back to about production, and because of that, I think I would fear that that 363 might just come out. And we might get a little closer to that 342, 350 area. Do we go below that? There's a gap from 338 and a half to 342. And we'll see if that gap holds. If you take out 342 and a half, you've got an outside range you're going, and I'd have to say why. But we do have South America producing a lot of corn, and they're going to compete against us in the near term. But Argentina, who's second largest exporter in the world for corn, now they're starting to almost compete against Brazil a little bit. But Argentina, all of a sudden, their first crop or early crop corn is pretty much aggressively planted. But the later planted corn that gets planted in December, it's now thought that with the instability of their political situation with President Mauricio Macri, not doing as well as he thought he would, it's thought that the farmers may elect to not plant that as much of that corn. That could be a blessing for us.
And then a lot of times in Argentina when there's that turmoil, if they have grain in the bin, they hold on to it because that's money. That is true money to them, and so they don't price it out. So that would be selfishly really good for the United States if they
You know, another issues. Thing too, of course, I have this theory that China's just going to rob us blind of everything. Food inflation is flying through the roof in China. And this morning when I was driving down here, I was listening to Fox News on XM, and they were at 6 o'clock talking about the stock market, and the S&Ps were down again this morning, and the Dow was lower, and they talked about how we broke so hard yesterday, but it was interesting because their analogy why we were down so hard today is because China had come out overnight and stated that they were going to retaliate if President Trump went through with the tariffs on September 1st. And I thought, excuse me, but yesterday he just backtracked on that. So I think China is really working our markets like no other. That love affair we had into the middle of May when they all of a sudden backtracked on 150 pages of negotiations that they had agreed to was all planned. China will work us till the umpth degree, and when they finally have all their coffers full of everything they need, and they need everything, then, and in the moment here, President Xi doesn't have everything going real smoothly because he's got Hong Kong he's fighting. I just think that they'll finally then come around and say, okay. But they're still filling their coffers, and by manipulating our markets lower, they're in essence working the markets in South America too.
And I think since you opened the door there to China, we have to talk about the export situation, because exports put a cap on just how much we can get for rallies in the grain markets. What's your level then for corn and soybeans if we have all of these weather issues, if we pull acres back, if we don't have the yields there for corn and soybeans? How much of a rally can we really see if we don't have issues resolved with China?
With the grain exports, China overall still needs our grain, because while they could buy a bulk of their needs from Brazil, they have to now keep Brazil in line. So they need to make sure that they're working with us so they can say to Brazil, we don't necessarily need you, we still have the United States. So our demand is, in my opinion, it's going to remain. It's definitely not as robust as it had been by any means, and I don't feel that it is forever lost demand. Because once they get the African swine fever and the hog market figured out over there, the demand is going to come right back up. And we're also hearing that in Indonesia, now they're using more vegetable oils in general. They're going to increase their biodiesel numbers. So that is good for our soybean oil markets. It's good for soybeans. And exports obviously are important, especially we're still exporting a lot of dairy over that way. We're exporting our hogs, and hopefully we can get our beef market opened up. But it's going to be a continuous process, and I think the head games are going to continue until we get the next presidential election figured out. So a little bit more time yet.
If there's one plus out of these trade talks and tariffs, it's getting us to look elsewhere for more business and maybe diversify our buyers so that we're not so dependent on China. Now, granted, they're kind of doing the same thing, but still, we're one of the largest. We are, besides Brazil now, we're competing, but we're the largest exporter of corn in the world, and we are vying for, you know, number one and number two with Brazil as largest exporter of soybeans. If China goes to Brazil and buys them out, that means Europe's coming to us. It just means it's shifting, but it's not as sexy as if it was all going to one client. That's the whole thing. So there is some plus in this, that maybe over the long haul, this will be a good thing.
Looking then into 2020, we've got a lot of questions, and you guys also can tweet or Facebook or share your questions if you have questions that don't get answered today. We take questions for the analysts each week for Market to Market. You can find us on social media there at Market to Market. But looking ahead to November of 2020, I want to talk beans specifically. Naomi, you're saying we're going to punt this China thing off until the next presidential election. So that means November 2020 soybeans. Folks maybe won't plant as many bean acres next year if we don't have things resolved with China. Where do you see that contract heading?
We will know that better when we know what our yield is this year. That's going to answer all the questions first. But the, like I said, the political turmoil is just going to continue to rule everything and be the back of our minds. With the threats of no supply, lots of supply, do we export, do we not export, and just moving parts that are going to change every month. So be ready for the continued volatility.
And I think if we look at the report that just came out, they were actually implying that we were going to be exporting more beans this next year, which I think is interesting. And that too will change maybe, because the less you have, the less you can get rid of.
So would this be, for our cattle producing and hog producing friends in the audience, would this be a good time to lock in feed needs for the upcoming season, or should they wait? It sounds like maybe we could fill a gap on the corn charts, so is this a good time or not?
Well, I certainly think it isn't a bad time to go ahead, because of the fact that when you look at it, if we do dip down into that 340 level, you know, what are the odds of an outside range year? Well, I'm not so sure this year they're that good. So I would think that says then we're somewhat limited. You might be 20 cents within the low. In the scheme of it, that's not so bad. And the other thing is, and this is a technical thing, but when you look at the corn chart, and I go back, and it was by divine intervention that I got this chart up. I have the same equipment at home that I have in the office, and I just happened, I don't know what I hit, but my quote page changed, and I got this chart up. And I looked at the chart, and I thought, oh my gosh. and it was a monthly continuation chart of corn. So that means that when like September goes off, December's on that chart. And along on that chart was, and it was going all the way back to 1968, and on that chart was what we call Bollinger Bands. In other words, it encompasses along all the highs and the lows. And when the market exceeds the upside of those bands, the market tends to come back down to the middle of the road, to the average of the two bands. And in June, May, June, and July, we were above the Bollinger Band. It's happened every time going back to 1968. And I looked at that and it jumped out at me. And I remember I was doing a market broadcast that morning for Salina, Kansas, and I talked about corn going to 377 and a quarter. And I probably shocked everybody because I'm like the eternal optimist, you know? I mean, beans in the teens, remember that? So, well, some of you are too young, but so anyway. But it just jumped out, and the middle of the road was 377. And that's what caught my eye, thank goodness. And I did find, I went back and re-looked again at that chart. In fact, I posted that chart in my website. And I went back and re-looked at it. I was looking for other times when we've had like 4 years of sideways markets. And we found one that where you came up and you went outside the Bollinger Band, and that could have been your first initial breakout, and then you fell back all the way to the middle of the road, and the market congested for months at that middle of the road. And then all of a sudden, the market exploded, and it went just screaming straight higher. In fact, that's probably the move that took us to our 849. Now, I don't think we're going to 849, but there is gaps on these charts for continuous contracts, be it whether it's year in, year out, December corn, or if it's September corn. And I think maybe even it was on the July contract too. So there are gaps, and they're huge. They go from 548, depending on the contract, from 548 up to 709. They are huge. And I've been in this business quite a while, and I've never seen these kind of gaps that stay. And so we've had these since they started in 2013. So we are 6 years old in these gaps. The market needs a nudge. We might be trying to get it this year, but that's why I just say, for end users, get some protection. And I would do it all the way to July of next year.
Yeah, building on what Sue says, she's doing a great job of talking about technical trading, which is another component of what you need to be watching for marketing. So as a young farmer trying to figure out how you figure out where prices are going to go, do some just Googling on technical analysis for trading or futures trading or commodity trading. Because a lot of times these charts are a roadmap, essentially. And depending on what type of chart formation we see out there, that's how we can predict whether prices could go higher and how much higher they could go, or if prices could go lower and how much lower they go. So we're aware of which scenario could potentially unfold depending on what the actual fundamental meat and potatoes of the situation is. So that's a really important thing to be looking at, and it's important to start to learn it. And Sue probably has some of those things on her website and on her newsletter. I know that I do the same with my newsletters for my clients. So those are really important things, and we'll help answer some of those questions as you go forward.
The thing I want to end with before we open it back up to questions and then bring our other panelists back on is what's been going on in the cattle markets this week. They used expanded limits, touched $6 in the feeder cattle markets. They lost $6 on one day. The next day, they gained them back.
Drama, drama, drama.
Lots of drama. Naomi, fill us in.
It's interesting. So the traders took the headline of the Tyson fire, the big processing plant fire that is in Kansas. That is a big deal. That particular facility processes like 5 to 6% of our country's beef. So in the short term, when the traders saw this headline, their thought was not
oh no, we're not going to have all this meat that we need by Labor Day. Their thought was, oh no, can the other processing plants in our country help out and absorb all of these extra cattle that are ready to come to market? And the assumption is no. Therefore, the cattle are going to get heavier because they have to stay on feed longer. And so people were thinking that there would be a bigger supply. So that hit the computers and the algorithms, limit down again the next day, and now we're coming off from that and getting back to reality that beef demand is strong and our box beef prices have actually improved. And it's going to be, I think, in my opinion, more of a local basis issue. I feel bad for the producers in Kansas who are going to have to truck and trailer their cattle different places. So I think that's where it's going to end out. But that was just ridiculous. That's what I think.
I think that when that came out, I kind of think of when you go back, if you look at the packing houses, they haven't done a real good job of expanding shackle space. And when you look at the hog market, hogs went down to $10. I think it might have even been in a December month, but went to $10 on the board. And the reason being is we had way too many hogs for the shackle space. So I think when they started hammering on selling into the cattle, which, by the way, futures was already discount to the cash market by quite a bit, I think they were doing it on an emotional thought relating back to the hog market. This time, though, demand is very, very good. If you look at when BSE hit, and that too was in December, right on Christmas Eve, I think, the market broke hard for, I think, 5-6 days. We didn't have that kind of a situation because we do have good demand. And just today, our earnings from Walmart for the second quarter this year was shockingly fabulous. And that kind of sent a message that maybe this economy in the U.S. isn't quite so bad. And other packers are certainly going to be enticed to... they have the incentive with the cutout soaring like it has this week, I think $10 or more up for the box beef. I think what you're going to see is that these packers are going to say, I'm going to add a second shift on Saturdays and try to consume these cattle, and they're going to try to get them as fast as they can because the demand for the product is so good that they want their... They're looking at all-time record high profit margins right now for the packer. So a good deal for them. And if anything, I would suspect that Tyson's going to move every effort to get that building. And they say it was one room, but it was so hot that it melted the cement ceiling. So it had to be just horrendous. But it is what it is. And Tyson is going to pay their people their weekly salary to keep them, and they have to, or they'll leave. And so it's an interesting time, but the cattle market, I think we have to keep in mind, cattle never did make higher highs for this year, and neither did feeders, but we have made lower lows. So we have a down year. And I know that as we go through the fourth quarter, beef production now is going to be up, but on the same token, we aren't looking at more numbers per se. It's just they're shoved from the third quarter into the fourth quarter. So it's kind of shifting this ahead, and it might keep this market in quandary just a little bit longer.
Well, I'm going to open it up. If there's any audience members that have market questions, they can be as basic as explain to us options and calls, because I know we've got some beginning folks in the room. If you guys have any questions, you want to shout them out. If you don't want to come all the way up to the microphone here. I'm going to repeat the question just so we have it for audio purposes. The question is, we haven't addressed African swine fever yet. What's that going to do for our meat demand, essentially?
Okay, so African swine fever, definitely still an ongoing issue. They're doing their best to get it under control. Now they're saying that maybe half the herd is gone, which explains why their prices have increased by, you know, over 50%. We also have seen that in lost demand, not just here, but Brazil also. Some of their export markets aren't quite as hot and heavy going to China. But they are increasing poultry production. They are increasing all aspects of the poultry, turkey, ducks, chicken, and they're going to do their best to get it fixed. Obviously, it's an ongoing issue, but that's a lot of people that need to eat. And here's the deal with China. If you have hungry people, their system of government isn't going to work if the people are hungry and get angry. So they got to get it fixed as quick as possible. It's a, I think, probably a year or two hiccup, and then it'll come right back, and they'll rebuild their hog facilities bigger, differently, get them out of the smaller backyard production, and do more of a managed approach on a bigger scale. But short term, absolutely, something to keep watching. It's spreading throughout Asia. If it comes here, yikes, you know, scary things. I just think it's more of a 1 or 2 year thing, and I'm hopeful.
I will add too, Ambassador Branstad was here earlier this weekend for the state fair at the Governor's Charity Steer Show, and we grabbed him afterwards and asked, you know, specifically about African swine fever, because obviously he's on the ground there, you know, he gets to see the realities of what's going on, and he said, short term, they're trying to push their people to eating more poultry and fish, but the protein diet is such an essential part of their diet that long term they're not going to move away from eating protein. They know how to cook it, they use it in their recipes. He said poultry and fish might be healthy alternatives, but the mindset behind the protein is there, and it's not going away for those people.
You know, another thing too, they have the People's Republic of China 70-year anniversary coming up here on October 1st. And that commands a lot of pork in their celebration. And then in January, I think it's earlier this year, it might be January 25th or 22nd, I think it's 25th, is the Lunar New Year for China. And that is very important because it's like a week-long celebration, and pork is a key part of their diet. It's just for those celebrations especially. What's interesting is, I think there is a pullback from eating pork in China, though. I think that there's been an apprehension. Even though it's said to be safe, people have probably a memory of avian bird flu, and they don't. You can't eat poultry if that, and God forbid if that happens to them on top of this. But I think, I was talking to a friend of mine that is a lawyer in the U.S. and is Chinese, national Chinese. And her parents are here and visiting, and they have, they're from a major southeastern China city, and they have quite a few different upscale restaurants. Business has fallen through the floor since African swine fever came out. People are not going out to eat as much as they were. I thought that was an interesting comment when I visited with them, that was happening. But I do think the concern is they want people to repop and start, you know, trying to put hogs back in. It isn't going to stop. It's not going to solve the issue, because this African swine fever comes in the dirt. It labors in dirt, gets on grass, it's everywhere. And so consequently, it is what it is. They're going to endure this for some time. And then it's spreading, you know, through Vietnam. We have not seen Vietnam enter our import market or export market yet, and they will. It's just they're going through their product to get rid of it first, and their people will eat it. So they're going through it. But back in China, a lot of this, you know, over 40% at least, if not more, of their hog industry is mom and pop backyards, less than 500 head. And when they start to see a hog sick, they don't notify the authorities. They go quick, take it to, you know, all of them to market and dump them before anyone knows, so that they don't have to worry about losing money. And I think if anything, this does for China is it gets rid of the mom-and-pop operations and moves them towards more efficiency and more westernized operations.
If you have any feedback, send it to us, markettomarket@iptv.org. Again, we will continue our discussions from around the Iowa State Fair and the commodity groups that work in and around Iowa. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.